Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to be part of our conversation or have questions for our guests, you're always invited to send us an email. The address is midday@sdpb.org, or you can give us a call at 800-524-3604. That's 800-524-3604. Sometimes the most valuable scientific data is collected by people like you. Each year at this time, bird watchers fan out across the nation to take part in Christmas season bird counts. Birders count and log as many species as they can. Today, we're joined by two people who count. Dr. K.C. Jensen is from South Dakota State University, where he teaches wildlife management. Dr. Jensen, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
And Michael Melius is a bird count volunteer in the Black Hills. Michael, thanks for joining us as well.
Oh, hi.
Dr. Jensen, let's start with you. Give us an overview of what a bird count is. What does it look like?
Well, the Christmas bird count takes place 2 weeks on either side of Christmas Day every year, and thousands of them are around the country. It's a 15-mile in diameter circle, and the same area is counted year after year after year to track changes in bird numbers and species over time. In South Dakota, there are 20-some-something of these. It varies from year to year, about 11 West River and about the same number East River. And we go out. We usually start right at sunup, or we can go owling actually at midnight. We go out and start listening for owls, but we go out usually around sunup and into groups and survey the area. We count not only the number of species, but the number of individuals. And then this gives us, a feeling for changes in numbers over time.
So you're listening and you're watching, and how are you documenting, or how are you counting?
We literally drive around and walk around through areas, and we record what we see and write it down, and then at the end of the day, all of the groups that count within that 15-mile circle combine all of their data. And it's submitted to the National Audubon Society, who keeps that database. And anybody can get on. If you go to audubon.org, you can go on and actually look at the data from any place, any of the circles in the United States, and track those numbers actually from 1900 to the present. The Christmas bird count started in 1900. So we have now 115 years of data that you can track over time.
Do you have any sense of what inspired it to be started in 1900? What were they looking for then?
Well, actually, it's kind of an interesting story. There was a tradition at the time where people would go out and shoot birds. It was like a Christmas bird hunt. and some people said, you know, why don't we just start counting?
We may have a pause with Dr. Jensen then. Michael, there, are you with us?
Yeah.
Michael, we'll go back to that story in just a minute, but tell us what it's like the morning of a bird count. Who's there? How many people are with you? What's it like to go out on site?
Oh, well, some of the Christmas bird counts, they have a gathering place, like at a restaurant. You know, early in the morning, 7:30, and then they'll take off from there. And like, I've been doing the Rapid City count for quite a few years. I was the compiler for about 10 years. The compiler is the person who's kind of in charge of assigning people to certain areas, and then you know, accumulating the results at the end of the day and reporting them. So I did that for about 10 years. And so for the Rapid City count, we just assign the areas ahead of time, and so people go to their area, or maybe it's right out there in their backyard. They're you know, feeder watchers, people who can just look out their backyard and our front yard and count birds. That counts too. We certainly need those people. And So basically, that's what people do. You just get up at the crack of dawn and get out and start looking for birds.
Did you have any interest or background in this, or did you start out just as a curious individual?
Well, I started bird watching back in 1978, actually, as a young man, and just hiking in the Black Hills, and had some gray jays come up close to me, and I was really curious about them, and they seemed kind of tame, and that's what got me started. And then, the Christmas counts, when I moved out to the Black Hills, there was one going that's been going since 1953 in the Rapid City area, and so I just got involved with that.
What do you like about it? What keeps you coming back?
I think with any birder, it's the hope of seeing something unusual, a rare bird, or maybe a high number of birds. Mm. That's kind of the main thing. But it's also contributing to science and knowing that 1 year's data, 1 year's records, 1 year's Christmas count don't really mean that much. But you get 50 years in a row, and you can start seeing trends. And then across the nation, once you put them all together, and then you can really start looking for trends and trying to gather meaningful information from the Christmas count.
We're going to hop back to Dr. Jensen. I want to go back to the story because it was pretty compelling. So take us back to, if someone's just tuning in, we're talking about how the Christmas bird count was started, 1900, and it started with kind of a hunting element to us. You want to go back to the beginning of that story and go from there, please?
Yeah, I'm sorry I cut out. The tradition at the time was to people would go out in hunting parties on Christmas Day, and some bird lovers said, why don't we just go out and count birds? And that really was the impetus for the Christmas bird count, and that caught on, and it spread, and then it became standardized with these 15-mile circles. And it's spread since then. So it's really quite remarkable. And as like Michael said, some of these here in South Dakota, of course, they haven't been going since 1900, but we can go back 50-some years on some of these circles and look at changes in numbers over time or new species that have shown up, in recent years.
So talking about those new species, I know that Charles McRae recently interviewed you and did a piece for SDPB about a sort of rare and maybe not so fortunate sighting for the bird anyway. Do you want to tell us about that?
Sure.
Give us an update on how that bird might be doing.
Yeah, this bird is a great Kiskadee. It's a member of the flycatcher family, so it's mainly an insect eater. It showed up at a farmstead just south of Valga, South Dakota, here in Brookings County. And it was reported by the homeowner there on another citizen science site called eBird, where people can log their bird sightings. And it happened to be reported on the weekend that we had the South Dakota Ornithologists Union meeting in Brookings in early November. Okay. And several of the eBird reviewers for those lists were in town and said, look at what was just reported. So we all went out there, and sure enough, here was this great Kiskadee, where the only place in the United States you can reliably see them is on the very southern tip of Texas.
Hmm.
These are non-migratory birds, insect eaters, and how it got to eastern South Dakota is really anybody's guess, but it's taken up residence there. Right now, of course, there aren't any insects, but it's eating suet that the homeowners are putting out.
Mm.
And it's also started eating canned cat food, of all things. The homeowners just keep feeding it, and it's hanging around. People have been coming to see this from neighboring states. Yesterday, as a matter of fact, I got an email from a gentleman from Minneapolis looking for directions, and provided them to him, and he emailed me back and said they saw it yesterday. And I think another birder from the Black Hills was coming over today to see it. So this is, it's really caused quite a stir around here.
Now, this bird is in many ways alone, though. He's separated from the rest of his kind. He's not going to have any chance of finding a mate in Brookings, right?
I think things would be pretty tough.
Well, so what are his chances long term as an individual?
Well, you know, unfortunately, I don't think it's good.
Right.
Number one, they're not really adapted to this type of weather, and like you said, there's no others of its kind. And since it's non-migratory, it doesn't have that instinct to fly south. I'm guessing it's going to hang out at this farmstead until it meets its end in one way or another.
So is there any opportunity to intervene in that? Because one of my first questions was, is it possible that it was brought here by a human being, or do you think it just drifted on the wind and ended up this far from home?
Well, anything is possible. My guess is it got caught up on the front end of one of the rather strong storm systems we had this summer. The homeowners said that it's been hanging around there for several months since maybe mid to late summer. They just didn't realize it was a real rare bird.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of intervention, there isn't really very much we can do. It is a bird that's protected under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. And so capturing it and moving it, not impossible, would require a lot of permits and the types of things that probably aren't really very feasible.
So as the story kind of alluded to, seeing a tropical bird in South Dakota is not an indicator of climate change, but there is an increasing body of research showing bird range and habitats are changing in response to the climate. Do you want to talk about how the bird count has, what it's shown us over the past few years?
Well, sure, and I'm sure Michael, has seen some of this too. Fairly common species now, like northern cardinals, for instance, 50 years ago or even 30 years ago, were very rare in our Christmas bird counts, but now are commonly seen here in Brookings throughout at least the southern half of South Dakota. They're in Rapid City now. And again, where 30 years ago, that they just didn't exist here. So we can track the kind of expansion of the range of some of these species. Another one that's really quite remarkable to watch is an invasive species called the Eurasian collared dove. Hmm. And it's present in every town in the state. But if you look at the Christmas bird counts up until about the year 2000, nobody had them. And then within a span of about 4 years, they showed up in every Christmas bird count, and the numbers seen in every Christmas bird count has been rising exponentially. So we've been able to track an invasive species by use of this citizen science.
So the implications of that invasive species are what? How does it affect the ecosystem when it arrives and expands?
Well, again, that's anybody's guess. I wonder if there are some potential competition effects with our native mourning doves, which of course don't spend the winter here, but breed here, and South Dakota and North Dakota are the number one and two production states for mourning doves in the nation. And what the impacts are of the invasive collared dove, we don't know yet. So it's something that needs to be on our radar screen. But again, the Christmas bird count has been a really good tool to track the spread of that species.
Michael, I want to switch back to you a little bit. You mentioned something earlier about coming back year after year hoping to see something unusual. And I'm wondering, what have you seen that surprised or delighted you in past bird counts or even this year's work?
This year, we kind of had some warm weather species. I mean, we had a warm early December. It's been been typical winter the last few weeks, but I know other, like the Sturgis compiler was talking about some warm weather birds, some sparrows that were still around, and maybe some of the cold weather birds from up north hadn't come south quite so much. Whether that's just an El Nino year or climate change, I mean, you know, again, one year doesn't tell you that much. But so that's been one thing that's been observed around here. As far as anything really unusual, I can't. Nothing as spectacular as what they're seeing
right.
over by. And, Kent, I have a question for you. Can all South Dakotans count that as a lifeless bird?
You sure can, as long as you come over and see it.
Right.
Oh, shucks.
You have to plan a trip now.
Michael. Well, we all know about it, though.
Right. There are photographs of it on our website, sdpb.org. So if a photograph of the bird in South Dakota counts, you can start there. Michael, I'm wondering obviously it's December, it's January in South Dakota. You've probably been out during some bad weather. What's the worst weather experience you've done a bird count in? Any stories there?
Yeah, high wind and cold and blowing snow. I mean, where you just pretty much do the morning and kind of give up. But generally, we try to have a postponement day when it's really bad. I mean, we're certainly not asking people to get out in blizzard conditions or icy conditions or something like that.
Is there still time to get involved in
South
Dakota?
Oh, yeah, there are a couple or three still left that I know of in South Dakota. Pine Ridge, the town of Pine Ridge, has one on Saturday, January 2nd. Canton also has one on January 2nd. Spearfish has one January 3rd. That's this coming weekend. So.
Okay. We have a caller in from Yankton. This is Jim with a question for someone on our panel. Jim, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. I'm sitting here looking at about five dove-like birds with a black ring around the neck, black on the tips of their wings. Can you tell me what those are?
Who wants to field that one? Casey Jensen?
Those are those Eurasian collared doves that I mentioned a few minutes ago. And they don't migrate, and they've they're in every town in the state that I know of.
Sure. And he's going to be seeing more of those. That's the invasive species you were talking about, is that right?
Yes, okay. They are. Yep.
Jim, does that answer your question?
You bet.
You
thanks so much.
Might not have seen those before for a reason. Dr. Casey Jensen teaches wildlife management at South Dakota State University. Dr. Jensen, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome.
And Michael Melius has been a bird count volunteer for the past decade in the Black Hills. Michael, thank you as well.
You're welcome. Anytime.